You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to On the Couch,
On the Couch
with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
I love the way the guy says, on the couch, on the couch, on the couch. The reverb is so cool. And good morning, everybody. It's Dr. Michelle, your friendly psychologist. That's me at your service. We have another great morning together, you and me. It's Friday. Woohoo! That's one good thing, huh? Got a lot of great responses from last week's show. Also, I'm going to be answering a lot of your questions. You wrote me about relationships, self-esteem. I got another one of those online tests. You know, those live tests we can do to find out about your attitudes towards relationships, how you treat other people, some of your attitudes towards opening up, sexual relationships, things like that. So it's a cool test. And what else? Oh, yeah, I'm going to be responding to some of the questions regarding the differences between men and women. And I also got an email, looks like from Lawrence, who says, Dear Dr. Michelle, I watched your TV series on expertvillage.com about understanding body language, how to read body language. Can you recommend a good book? Well, I will do that. I will email you back, Lawrence. But yeah, if you guys are interested in understanding body language, you know, I've been working on a lot of communication and relationship issues for years. So what I do is I try to help people understand other people's body language. You know, it's the unspoken word. Yeah, it's that stuff that they do. The eye contact, the head bobs, the facial gestures, the arms, the hands, the legs. What's that all about? Well, if you log on to expertvillage.com and then in the search area, you write in how to read body language. There you go. My series pops up and you'll see me talking about it. And I've got actors, you know, showing you actually what some of the no-nos are to body language. If you want to make a good impression in a relationship, in a job interview, if you want to give people subtle hints that you don't like them, they'll get it. So check it out. It's a nice series, and I'm very proud of the work on it because I put a lot of time into it, and you can learn a lot too. All right, great. So give me a call if you'd like to talk today. If you have issues, problems going on, relationships, self-esteem, some anxiety, depression, whatever is happening with you, you may call me. The line here is 818 area 602-4498. And let me just qualify that you and I do not have a therapeutic relationship. This is just advice and, as we call it, entertainment sometimes. But I try to do the best I can to inform you about what I know. And I'm not only always 100% right, just 96.3. No ego here. Humility. That's the deal. 818-602-4498. Dr. Michelle at your service. You can also find me on my website. It's docmichelletherapy.com. D-O-C, michelletherapy.com. There's two E's and two L's in my name, by the way. So there you go. We're going to get started with some of the responses. I have a question on my show usually every week. And I ask some of you folks to write me on my website or link on to my email address. Too many numbers and emails and websites and all that coming at you at once. But it's docmichelle@aol.com. You can write me. And I did receive a lot of responses last week. I asked on the air, what are the most important qualities do you think that make up a good relationship? What are the most important qualities of a good relationship? I got a lot of responses. And there's some really, and really a lot of them are, they have so much in common. But I'll read you, I'll skip some of the ones that really are similar. And then I got some real odd ones. They're just messing with me. People like to mess with me. That's okay. It's fun. Come on. Can't take life that seriously. So when I put it out there last week in the show, what are the most important qualities of a good relationship? And you wrote back to me on docmichelle@aol.com. Chrissy said, I think a good relationship requires being each other's best friend and trusting one another. Oh, yeah. There you go. I think each should respect the other's opinion and that stupid arguments over stupid things are healthy as long as they're not taken too far. Okay. We all have stupid arguments over stupid things because we all get in bad moods once in a while and we just put it on our spouse or our partner, our significant other, whoever. Might as well. All right. I agree, Chrissy. That's good advice. Laura writes, I think the most important qualities of a good relationship are good communication. Well, that's a no-brainer. She says, never being ashamed of each other for any reason. On occasion, surprising your mate with a nice romantic date or evening together and telling each other as much as you can, I love you. That's good. Okay, good relationship from Rebecca. She says, it's when your partner is more than just a partner. They should be your best friend. Yeah, there's a lot of best friend stuff in here, but I cannot really impress the significance and importance of that. You need somebody who you can have as a best friend. Yeah, you can have your girlfriends, girls, guys, you can have your buddy pals, your best buddy pals, but your best friend should be your significant other. Because that's what makes a really good relationship. You don't have games. There's no secrets. I mean, there's some secrets. Well, I'll get to that in a little bit. Okay. Becky says a good relationship is one purely based on trust. If nothing else, being able to be miles apart, yet never worrying a minute about what they're doing. Communication at all times is very important. Most importantly, respect for each other and their need for alone time. That's a biggie. Okay, we have a lot of trusting each other fully. Carrie says being able to enjoy the same things with each other, enjoying each other, and being able to take their separate lives and smoothly combine their lifestyles into a couple's lifestyle. Yeah, that's really healthy too. Chris, a good relationship, two people who are not afraid to tell the other anything that may come up in the relationship. Best friends, honesty, devotion, love, sense of humor. That's a biggie. Got to lighten up a little bit. Things get too heavy. Everybody gets depressed and angry and uptight. Can't let the world out there get to you and bring it into your home all the time. Gets weird. Let's see. Charles says a good relationship exists when either individual has the freedom to leave, but neither or neither wants to. That's right, Charles, baby. You go on that one. Brianna says, I honestly think that a good relationship is one where there are no secrets. You're completely open with each other. Okay. The biggest key is that the other person knows the worst possible thing about you and they love you even more for it. Now that's really a good idea. I'm not sure about always talking about your past and old past relationships and bringing up old stuff. Well, when I was married to my first husband, when I was with my first love, he used to say these wonderful things to me. And I wish you'd do more of that. No, no, no. When we're talking about where there are no secrets, I think there's a difference. You draw the line between getting deep and dirty into your past and sharing a little bit too much with your spouse or your significant other. There's certain things that you need to, just kind of lay low on. I mean, if you're one of those people, sometimes it gets tedious hearing about your ex-lovers and your ex-girlfriends and boyfriends and what they did and how great they were. And ooh, I mean, even if you're really secure in a relationship and you've been with somebody a long time, it still gets a little tedious and boring because the other person sometimes thinks, why are they talking about the old good days? Do they want to live there? Do they want to go back there? What's up? What's up with that? So you got to watch that sometimes. Okay, Jason says, I define a good relationship by the way you trust each other. Okay. You could hold them and run your fingers down the side of their face. Feel comfortable, you know. And you can also define a good relationship with fighting. Jason says, fighting is not my favorite thing to do with my girlfriend, but it needs to be done. It's not a real relationship until you fight. Okay, Jason, I want to clarify that for the listeners. And I kind of get what you're saying. I really understand. I guess what you're saying, I hope what you're saying, is that we all do have arguments, and we all have issues, and we all have bad moods, and we do fight. We argue. We have conflict. Fight's a little heavy duty for me. Fighting. I want to know what you're talking about. Physical? Come on, Jason. I hope you're not talking about that. But yeah, I mean, fighting's healthy. It's normal. We're human beings. We all have stuff going on. We don't like what the other person does because something they did hurt us, or it's, you know, touching on us for something in the past that hurt us, and we're feeling it again, and we need to communicate that. Fighting, there are ways to argue and have conflict with respect. You know, going on endlessly and sucking into what I call the drama, which some people feed off it. And that's why I have my little program I call Detoxing the Drama from Your Life. Because it is, I kind of compare it to abusing substances or whatever. You know, the addiction to drama. You grew up in one of those families where there's drama, high drama. Dad's always pissed. Mom's always moody. Mom was a drug addict. Dad was always whatever. My older brother or sister was a bully. I was always, you know, where you were meant to feel less than because there was always high drama and arguments and conflict. But you get used to it. Yeah, you get used to it. And then it's normal for you when you grow up, and that's what you do with your relationships. So I do have plans to help people detox from their drama so they can have healthy relationships. Because you see, if you need to have conflict and drama all the time in your life, all you're going to do is attract those people that like it, and they're not healthy. They want to engage in it with you, and they're enablers. Just like the old substance abuse language. Same thing. Drama. Same thing. All right, let's get back to this. I do digress. From Angie, a good relationship, Dr. Michelle, is when the two of you can actually feel better about your relationship after an argument. See, that's what I'm talking about. It's when you can really respect each other's differences and openly discuss feelings at all times. Those are the I statements. Angie has it a little more, I think, healthy there. Yeah, you discuss. Yeah, I feel really hurt when you do this. Not you're an asshole or you're a jerk because you. No, it's not name calling. It's I feel sad when you leave me, go out with the guys, and come home at 4 a.m. I don't like that. I need you to call me. I trust you. Nah. But I want you to call me and let me know what you're doing, just to let me know you're okay. All right, let's see what else. Here's another thing on fighting. Cassie says a good relationship is when the couple listens and doesn't interrupt when they're trying to work out a fight. Yeah, you got to kind of, but what you, shut up and let the other person talk about what they're feeling. Now, you can't do this for like 20 minutes. You got to have some downtime and let the other person respond. Okay, because that gets really tedious too. Cassie goes on to say that a good relationship is when they care for each other deeply and they share similar interests. Of course. They always say opposites attract. Yeah, that's exciting and sexy and all that. But when it comes down to it, it's very important to have people who have a lot of things in common with you. Respect the differences, you know, but having a lot in common makes for longer lasting relationships because you have less to tolerate. All right. A good relationship isn't necessarily flawless, according to Nick, because human beings aren't flawless. It's more important that you can grow with the person you love. If you can learn and grow each day with your best friend standing by you in body and in spirit, then you have a good relationship. Ooh, I like that, Nick. That's a good one. Okay, Vivian says, Dr. Michelle, a good relationship is when you can feel comfortable about everything together. Always being able to talk, joke, talking your commitment seriously with one another and never taking each other for granted. Laugh a lot and lighten up. That's what she says. And that's so true. I love that. That's so true. All right. Now, my question for this week, and I want you to respond, and I'll read it on the air next week. What is the worst thing you have done to ruin a relationship? What is the worst thing you've done to really screw up a relationship? And why do you think you did it? I'd love to hear from you. DocMichelle@AOL.com. DocMichelle@AOL.com. Answer that for me. What is the worst thing you've done to ruin a relationship? What did you do to screw things up? Why do you think you did it? Yeah, we all do things and mess up relationships for so many different reasons. Fear of intimacy, too scary to get close to somebody. Not ready. Yeah, we have a lot of low self-esteem within ourselves. We're not worthy. Sometimes we feel we're not worthy of a good relationship. Or they're just not right for us, so we mess it up. Lots of different reasons. All righty. We're going to be also talking about the differences in the way men and women talk. I have an email. Let's see. This looks like Catherine wrote me about why are men and women different in their communication. We'll talk a little bit about that. And, you know, I'll just give you a briefie on that. Because apparently she's having a hard time talking with her husband. And we have an online test to test your personality. Oh, let me answer this. I received really quick. Okay. Sarah says, Dear Dr. Michelle, where can I find a good man? Where can I find a good man? I'm online with matching dating services. I'm tired of guys in Los Angeles. I've lived in New York for a short while. I'm tired of them. Big city guys are getting to be a drag. All they're interested in is status and looks. Help! I want a real genuine guy. Well, I think you're exaggerating just a little bit. I think there are always nice guys out there anywhere. Yeah, big cities, more cosmopolitan. It's all about looking good. It's all about competition, media, money. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, come on, you know, generalizing and saying, I don't like any LA guys. Big city guys are such a drag because they all want that. Well, that's generalization, of course. I really am looking to find a place where I can meet men and get a variety because I really want to get married. I don't know what to tell you, but I did read something a little while ago about a good place to meet a guy. I pulled this one out of the Metro News Service in the health department, mental health, and it says, check this out, girls. Nevada might be a good place to live if you want to meet men. Nevada. According to the Las Vegas Sun, three of the nation's 10 cities where men outnumber women are in Nevada. Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and Reno are top-heavy with males. Isn't that interesting? A report on cities and counties based on the census in 2005 and other government figures, that's, you know, 3 years ago, but nonetheless, it shows that Nevada is second in the nation for men outnumbering women. In Las Vegas, there are reportedly 103.5 males for every 100 females. What's the five? Alaska, by the way, is at the top of the chart with nearly 104 men for every 100 women. So here's the dealio. If you're looking for a man, girls, you're tired of the big city guys. Well, you know, Nevada's getting to be a big city, especially Vegas. But, I mean, here's the deal. Men outnumber women in Las Vegas and Alaska, the state, everywhere. Yeah, so check that out. You want to go up there and freeze your butt off? Then, but here, you got a big selection. So the men outnumber the women, which is rare in cities. So hopefully that'll answer your question. So you can pick and choose. You can interview them all. You can go through them all, darling. Have a large selection. You see how I skirted that issue? I didn't get any real psychological advice. I just gave her statistics on where the men are. Okay. If you want to give me a call, by the way, if you have an issue or a problem, or you just want to ask me a question or something, give me a shout. 818-602-4498 is the number here on latalkradio.com with me, Dr. Michelle, your friendly psychologist. I'd love to talk to you. All right, it's time to take one of these live online tests. So let's get into this. You can learn something more about yourself and also your friends and families. I'm going to give you choices. So you don't get to make up your own choices for the most part in this test. But I will tell you the significance of each one of your choices. Supposedly, this is not necessarily an empirically validated test, but on personalitytest.com, they have some really good ones. And they do have some empirically validated tests. But this is something just to make you think about stuff and who you might be and what your choices might be. They even have a really cool test that was written by the Dalai Lama to test your character. It's a visual test. You got to do that one online. But personalitytest.com. I got to slow down, man. Whew. The caffeine is finally kicked in. So here we go. Okay, I just got an IM. Yes, you can answer my question. You can answer my question that I asked earlier. What is the worst thing you did to screw up a relationship? You can answer that question at my docmichelle@AOL.com. Yeah, on my email address, docmichelle@AOL.com. Okay, I just got another question. So go ahead and tell me what is the worst thing you've done to screw up a relationship. And think about maybe why you did that, because then I love to read that stuff on the air, and I'll do that next week. We'll explore it together. All right, here we go. This is the test to learn something more about yourself and also your friends and families. Are you ready? Now, when I give you the choices, I want you to just pick the first one you think of. Just go for it. Just pick it right away. Okay, don't really think. Well, you can think, but I mean, I can't tell you what to do, but. All right, imagine yourself in a forest. No, I haven't given you this one before. I do the forest test, but this is a new one. Imagine yourself in a forest. Number one. Ready? This is the first question. Is the forest you see light or dark? Is the forest you see light or dark? I see myself in a forest in daylight. I see myself in a forest at night. I see myself in a forest at dusk or dawn. Those are the three choices. I see myself in a forest in daylight. I see myself in a forest at night. I see myself in a forest at dusk or dawn. What did you choose? The forest is your life and how you see. What you think about your life. If you selected a forest in daylight, this would strongly suggest you're generally pretty happy. The more light you see in the forest, the more content you're likely to be with your life. If you selected a forest at night, it suggests there are some major things in your life that you'd like to change or are dissatisfied with, and that you're likely to be under some stress. Think about that. Oh yeah, for some reason. If you selected a forest at dusk or dawn, this would suggest something in between, that there are one or two things in your life that you'd like to change. Alrighty, no-brainer, kind of fun. All right, second question, here we go. Did you see a path? Did you see a path in the forest? Yes or no? If you saw a path in the forest, you're not yet settled into your life as it is. The path is symbolic of where you're going. People still finding their way in life are more likely to see a path. Those more settled in their direction or place in life are less likely to see a path. You're cool with where you're at. You're doing all right just now. So that's what that says. Next question. This is called the cup. Now, I ask you to walk through the forest. Here we go. You see a cup. What does it look like? I see a cup that looks valuable to me. Number one. I see a cup that doesn't look really valuable to me. So here we go. The cup is symbolic of wealth and your approach to it. The question gives you the chance to see any sort of cup. A teacup, a sporting trophy, a tin cup, and even a steaming cup of coffee. Now, this question gives you the opportunity to reward yourself. If you said you saw a cup that appeared valuable, then you rewarded yourself with something of value to you. If you didn't see a valuable cup when you didn't give yourself a reward, when the opportunity arose. If you see an old wooden cup, that's the question. All right, here we go. What do you do with the cup? Did you leave it alone? Did you pick it up and put it down? Did you use it and then leave it behind? Did you pick the cup up and take it with you? Leave it alone, pick it up, put it down, use it, and then just leave it behind, or pick it up and take it with you. If you left the cup alone, you were given the chance to take a reward but left it behind you. Either wealth has no real value to you, or wealth is something you think you've got to work for. If you pick the cup up and then put it down again, you were given the chance to take a reward and then you found an immediate use for the cup and used it there and then. Many people see a cup of tea or coffee and they drink it. Do you do that? Do you do something similar? You left the chance for a reward behind you and found a practical use for the cup. You took a here and now approach to the reward. And do you do that in your lives? If you use the cup but then left it behind, the third choice, it means that you were given the chance to take a reward in your life, and you may be repeating this in your life. You were curious enough to pick the cup up but left it behind you. Either wealth has no real value to you, or wealth is something you think you've got to work for. Again. If you took the cup with you, it says you probably saw a cup that was in some way valuable to you. You saw the chance to quickly reward yourself with easy pickings, and you took it. Is that your personality? Okay, there you go. Here we have a question about water, the water. You continue on your walk through the forest. You see water. What does it look like? I see a puddle. Do you see a puddle? Do you see a pond? Do you see a stream? How about a river? Do you see a lake? Do you see an ocean? So here are the choices. Quick, what does your water look like that you're seeing in the forest? Puddle, pond, stream, river, lake, ocean. Do not analyze. Pick it. Water is symbolic, according to this test, of sex. The depth and speed of the water you see is indicative of your attitude, appetite, and approach to sex. The speed at which you see water moving is an indicator of your appetite for sex, but not necessarily your need. The slower the water, the lower your appetite. The faster the water, the greater your appetite. The depth of the water is an indicator of how you see and what you want from sex. If you saw shallow water, and then you're able to reach fulfillment from deep and intense lovemaking. Yeah, Berber. If you saw fast-moving water, little and often is for you, baby. You're like quickies. I'm not responsible for this personalitytest.com. I'm just reading it. Could be true, though. All right, here's the deal. If you saw deep waters, then your love for the deep and intense doesn't mean you cannot enjoy anything else. You get true fulfillment from deeper and more intense lovemaking. For you, still waters run deep. Intense. And the ease with which you cross the water, by the way, is an indicator of your attitude and approach to sex. So the more easily you cross the water, in other words, if you saw an ocean, the more comfortable or liberal you're likely to be in your approach to sex. If you saw a puddle, baby, woo! Yeah. Okay, here we go. Let's keep moving.
We're going to go to, we're going to go to the bear. Here's the bear.
You continue on your walk through the forest and you see a bear. What sort of bear is it? I saw a cute teddy, I saw a real one. Ooh, big grizzly. Scary bear in the forest. Okay. The bear is symbolic of the problems and how you deal with them in your life. The question gave you the chance to see a problem. If you saw a teddy or Winnie the Pooh, then in relative terms, your life is stress-free. And when given a problem, you don't see one. You're pretty happy with life too, it says here. If you saw a real bear, you were given the chance to see a problem. People under routine stress will see large and very dangerous bears. We always catastrophize. What's the worst? It's a big scary bear. It's not a little happy poo in the forest. Alrighty. What's your bear doing? What's your bear doing? No, don't go there. Don't give me that. What's your bear doing in the forest? Okay, fine, go there. I don't care.
This is a serious personality test. Come on. All right. What's your bear doing? Choose the closest option. My bear hasn't seen me. Okay, that's good. My bear has seen me. He's doing cute bear type things. He's doing Winnie the Pooh things, looking for honey. My bear has seen me, but is minding his own business. He's checked me out. He's gone back to his own business. My bear has seen me, and he's looking threatening. Or if you picked E, none of them. He's coming right at me. Ah! The big bear. All right. Equally, a bear you're ignoring or was ignoring you is indicative of how you see stress and problems when they're presented to you. If the bear hasn't seen you, or has seen you but is doing cute bear type things, then it says here that you may not have any real problems in your life or don't consider that you do. You may not be under a lot of everyday stress or worry. Given the chance to see a problem, you really didn't see one. If the bear has seen you but is minding his own business, then whilst you have the usual problems in your life, you're not under unhealthy levels of stress or worry. You see that there's stuff out there, but the bear's doing his own thing. You're handling your stuff. If the bear has seen you and is looking threatening, you need a holiday. Says here you're under high levels of stress or worry. Mm-hmm. All right. Number three, you need to move on. How do you get around the bear? How do you get around the bear? Number A, letter A. I don't. Actually, he's cute. I'm seriously considering adoption. B, I ignore him and walk on. C, I get out of there before he sees me. D, I run up a tree or hide. E, how do I get around the bear? I stand and fight, and I win. F, I stand and fight, and I suffer a slight wound. G, none of these options is close. All right. How you get around the bear is supposedly indicative of how you deal with problems and how you resolve them. So if you answered that you were considering adoption, then your approach is very different to other folks' approaches. Unfortunately for them, most people are under much more stress than you. You are really chill. Yeah. All righty. We're going to look at a little question about the beach. You continue walking through the forest and then you reach a beach. How many people do you see? Hundreds. Whoa, look at all these people at this beach. Oh my gosh. 20 to 100 people. One or two. Now that would be a nice private beach. Or, none. The beach. You continue walking. None. All right, the beach is symbolic of how you relate to people around you. How many people you pictured on the beach relates directly to the number of people you want around you. A truly socially gregarious person is most comfortable in the company of a large number of people and seeks the audience. This personality type sees a beach packed with people. At the opposite end of the scale, the folks that saw a deserted beach, if you saw that deserted beach, you're happy with your own company. You're cool. You're very, very happy to spend long periods on your own, where others would feel very lonely. Now, if you saw hundreds of people on the beach, then you're quite a social animal. A person that's very comfortable in a crowded pub, club, or bar. You may even seek them out. You may like an audience. Okay. If you saw one or two people, then you're a person who would not want to spend a whole lot of time in crowded pubs, bars, or clubs. You can be a social animal, but you often are content with your own company. Vast majority of folks see a beach with one or two people on it. If you didn't see any people, then you're a person that really doesn't like to hang out in crowds. You may even avoid them. You have the potential to be a social animal, but you wouldn't get lonely stranded on a desert island. You may have a little healthier coping skills to be alone. You're content for long periods of time with your own company. All right. How far are the nearest people? Are they close enough to talk to on the beach? Are they close enough? Are they not close enough to talk to? Are they off in the distance or the beach is deserted? Are they off in the distance or the beach is deserted? Well, if you saw people that weren't close enough to talk to them, this suggests you don't need to contact people too much. You don't need all that input. But you like to know that someone is there for you. If you saw people in the distance, then you don't need contact with other people all the time. You're happy kind of with your own company. Okay, so there you go. That's one of the tests here we have live on the show, giving you a little idea about your social, patterns, how you feel about yourself, if you have pretty good coping skills to be alone. I want to be alone. Or a little scary thing, too, you might be isolating. You know, that's kind of scary, too. Let's have a drink on that one. Mm. Oh, yeah. Love that mineral water. Okay. All righty, then. I may have a call coming in. Let's see what we got here. All right, then. Let's see if we can answer this call. Answer. Good morning. It's Dr. Michelle. You're on the couch with Dr. Michelle.
Hi, doctor.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Hi, who's this?
This is Paul.
Paul, how are you today?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm having a good day, I guess.
Okay. What can I do for you?
How do you deal with depression?
How do you deal with depression?
Okay, how do you deal with this kind of, you know, you've been talking about cognitive therapy.
Sometimes I do talk about that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
Well, what's going on with you? Have you had depression for a long time?
I've been suffering from depression for probably the past couple years.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the financial, you know, the economy and things like that. And I just get depressed and I just don't know what to do.
Okay. Do you have a lot of social support around you? You have family and friends and stuff?
I got a wife, but I don't like to really share with her my problems and my concerns.
Does she make you feel like you can't do that? Does she close off to you?
Well, yeah, she's kind of in her own world, you know?
Okay. Yeah. She's trying to deal with her own stuff, too. Are you on medication?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. No. So this has been going on a couple of years, you said.
Yeah.
You might.
I just believe that, you know, I just deal with it, and I just try to remain strong, but I just don't know how to deal with it.
Okay.
I don't know whether medication is for me. I don't like the stigma attached to it.
No, a lot of people don't either. But I have seen a lot of improvement in folks. Who may be taking antidepressants, who have had chronic depression. I mean, it does help sometimes. It really does. You might talk with your general practitioner, internist, or whatever about that. Just get some feedback and see what they have to say, okay?
Interesting.
Yeah, do that. Put that out there and see. You asked me about this cognitive therapy that I've talked about before.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a really old, not really old. It's been around a long time. It was developed by psychiatrist Aaron Beck back in the 1960s. And the philosophy is that depression is the result of, like, habitual negative thoughts. Okay? Have you been told that before?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is kind of no-brainer stuff. When bad things happen, we start chastising ourselves with thoughts. Like, I'm no good. I'm a total failure. Nothing ever goes my way, right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
oh,
so
yeah.
If you keep having negative thoughts and you keep having negative experiences, you're going to keep reinforcing that and feeling that. Our feelings follow what we're thinking. Negative thoughts can send us spiraling down into depression. So do you do that? Do you wake up almost every day and sort of, when something bad happens, start going there?
I guess you'd call it catastrophizing.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I catastrophize everything.
Right. So if one thing goes bad.
It's just been. I lost my job I'm trying to find work and my wife gets down on me and it's just very, very tough.
Oh, sorry to hear that, honey. Are you putting it out there? Are you taking actions to try to find other work? Behavior, you know, take action, put it out there. I know you may have rough days where you don't feel like it, or you feel like, you know, two steps forward and three steps back and all that, but, you know, just reassure your wife that you're working on it so she won't be so worried, and you know, so you won't, you know, be that, you know, that really contributes. That's one of the biggies in a relationship is financial issues.
Okay. Yeah.
So here's the thing about the cognitive therapy. Okay. To conquer depression, we have to stop those automatic negative thoughts and replace them with more positive, truthful thoughts. Truthful thoughts. So you think that your negative stuff is the truth? Okay.
Mm.
Not necessarily. By nipping these thoughts in the bud, you can stop depression before it even starts. And so what they have are, you know, you talk about, I've said catastrophizing before. You probably listened, so you got that word from me. So everything, you know, one small thing that happens in your day or in your life or whatever, you put all those things in one box. Oh, my God, I haven't gotten a job yet. My wife's mad at me. I can never find people who can, you know, like me in my job. You know, it's all the stuff comes together, and then you start, you know, digging up every negative thing you can, you put it all in the same box. So that's not a good idea. And what we do to nip these things in the bud is we can halt the thoughts. You are what you think, baby.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's like, they have cognitive distortions is what they're called. They're like faulty thought patterns. And they do keep sending us into depression. They reinforce the depression. They reinforce the negativity. Okay. So,
but how do you stay positive when everything is crap around you?
Not everything is crap around you. Not everything is crap, and I'm going to tell you what you're probably doing. You're probably doing some of these things. Do you do all or nothing thinking?
Yeah.
Right? All or nothing thinking. You feel you're a total failure in your career. You feel like you'll never get a job, right? That's called all.
Well, it's been like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all or nothing thinking. Get rid of that. How do you know you will never get a job? All or nothing thinking. Lose it. Cognitive distortion. Do you overgeneralize?
Do I do that?
Yeah. Do you overgeneralize? That's another cognitive distortion.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
I guess I do. Yeah.
Overgeneralizing. No one is going to hire me. All bosses have something against me. The economy is horrible. Generalizing to everything. That's what people
do. A friend
of
mine just got a job. I do cable. I do cable installation.
All right. So hey, I would think, you know, that would be a really great field right now. So keep putting it out there. All right. There's another cognitive distortion they call a mental filter.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example. Like, let's just say Sue's having a bad day.
Yeah.
So she's driving home. A nice guy waves her to go ahead of him as she merges into traffic. Now, later in her trip, another driver cuts her off.
Right.
Then she just says to herself, you know, there's nothing but rude and insensitive people in the city. The mental filter goes to the negative town, goes to the negative place. Hey, you know what? There are exceptions. Look at the exceptions in your life. Look at the exceptions in your life. Have you worked in the past? Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Did your friend just get a job?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Are you looking through the papers? Are you going online? Are you networking with your friends, finding out what might be available?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
It's
just tough when you're down.
Right.
You know, it's just tough picking myself up. And
right, sure.
Trying to keep a happy face.
Well, sure it is. It's
really
tough. Trying
to smile and got bill collectors. And
well, of course you do. It's
got
tough.
Got a lot of crap going on.
Well, it is difficult, and I'm so sorry you're going through this right now, but, you know, there are ways you can get yourself up and out. There really are. And, you know, you can only control a couple of things there, okay? You can control your behaviors, your actions, okay, and those thoughts of yours. So if you every day take...
That's a biggie, controlling my thoughts.
There you go, and this is what I'm talking about to you.
Yeah.
Okay?
I can see that.
And if you keep giving yourself these cognitive distortions, as they call them, you know, should statements. Oh, I should be. By now, I should have been hired. Well, no, there are issues in the economy. You know, you jump to conclusions, possibly. Okay? You assume the worst Negative. The worst. You go to the worst scenario. You jump to conclusions. You disqualify the positive. What really is happening around you? We talked about that. Overgeneralization. Don't do that. All or nothing thinking. Go to the reality. What's the reality around you? Yeah, it's tough in the economy. We can all face that. I'm not into denial. But go to the reality of you can actually keep putting it out there and there will be an opportunity. That's the reality. And it's hard when you're dealing with the depression. Again, I would suggest you maybe go to your internist or the doctor who you trust and ask about the possibility of antidepressant. Because sometimes, you know, in your life when we have, you know, external stressors, we have problems. Maybe sometimes we need a little boost to help us through the rough times. Doesn't mean that you're, you know, have psychiatric issues. You know, you may have some chemical depression that you inherited. You may. But if you keep being kind of beat down and hit by life, as they say, you've got to start standing up and knowing that it's going to get better. But the only way it will is if you take action, honey. You start looking, you start working, you start networking, you start socializing. Get a little, do you have some good guy friends you can talk to?
That's tough.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's tough to have a good friend to talk to.
Okay. All right.
I think what I need to do is if I, you know, wake up in the morning and have a good attitude and try to change my thoughts and try to be positive.
Yeah.
And that's the toughest thing to do.
Yep. That's a really tough thing to do. And what I tell you to do sometimes is what's really cool is you have a plan of action every night before you go to bed. You word process or whatever you do to yourself, put on your Palm Pilot, whatever you do on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
The things you have to do, the basics, get up in the morning, get your butt up, you know, get your circadian rhythms back. I get a feeling that you're sleeping in, you're getting a lot of sleep here.
Yeah.
Kind of lethargic, kind of slow moving and all that. Get your circadian, you get into bed late, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Staying up late. All right. Get off that train of the circadian rhythm late night, late morning thing. Because here's the thing, your wife is probably really worried about you and she sees you kind of slugging around. You've got to get up and start taking the actions to get your body in shape. Are you exercising?
Not really.
Okay. No. What can you exercise? Do you have any physical issues?
I have a back problem, but
Can you walk? Get your butt up and walk. Get your butt up every morning. Get your whatever you take in the morning, your pain meds, or what do you have to take for your regimen? Take your coffee and get your butt up and walk. Write your list at night, what you have to do, who you're going to contact. Call some old friends who you used to work with, who you felt comfortable with, and start reconnecting.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Start reconnecting.
That's
start talking to your wife. Women love touchy-feely hearing feelings. When women see their men moping around and they ask questions, you say, I'm fine. No, we're not buying it. We know what's going on. So you've got to start opening up. Be a little more vulnerable to her. Don't be ashamed of having depression. Tell her you plan on going to the doctor. Tell her you called me today. Tell her that you're going to work on the positive and try to change some of those things.
She actually told me to call you.
Well, good. I like
her. She listens to your show.
Well, good. I hope she's listening right now. And why don't you give me a call back next week? Let me know how it goes, okay?
Okay.
Do some of these things I suggested. The only person who's going to get you out of this, honey, is you. You know, nobody's going to come and you know, save you.
You're right.
You've got to take the actions and change those negative thoughts. Just do it. Put it out there. It's almost like, you know, sometimes the lottery. It's a numbers thing. The more you put it out there, the more action you're going to get back. You may keep hitting your head, boink, 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 and getting wiped out, but you're going to get some results. All right, darling?
Okay.
And do go to your general practitioner. I'm going to have to run. But thank you so much for calling.
Thanks.
Let me know what goes on.
Michelle.
Yeah. Contact me, by the way, and have a good day. Take good care of yourself.
Okay.
Tell your wife thanks for having a call. By the way, you can ask any questions if you like. Find me at docmichelle@aol.com. Answer my question for this week. I'll put it on the air next week. If you have some feedback, what's the worst thing you've ever done to really mess up a relationship? And why do you think you did it? We can talk about that. That'll be fun next week. Fun. What kind of sick person am I? That'll be fun. TJ McCormick just walked in, my favorite And he's ready for you. He's got a great show coming up, as usual. Hey, TJ, darling.
Oh, yeah, genius all the way around.
Yeah, baby. See, he's positive. Mm-hmm. Find me on my website, drmichelletherapy.com. And if you want to learn about understanding body language, you can also find me on my TV show on expertvillage.com. Just type in how to read body language. You can find out what people are really saying when they're moving certain ways or not giving you eye contact and all that stuff. All right. Oh, there's my music. That means I got to get the heck on out of here. This is Dr. Michelle, your friendly psychologist. It's time to get off the couch now. You can put your shoes on and you can lay there for a while if you want. Enjoy. Listen to TJ. He's the best, man. Have a great day. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 11. I'm here, but you'll hear this again. And next Friday at 11 a.m., you and I have a date. Let's do it. Bye-bye. Back.